Welcome, everyone, to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. My name is Chris Short, and joining me, as always, is Jake Barnett. This is your SmackDown audio review for the SmackDown that aired May the 4th, 2012. Take back on May the 1st in Toledo, Ohio. And let's get the plugs out of the way before we jump in. Of course, Jake and I do this All Access SmackDown review every single week for you guys. Neither one of us covered the show the night before, but we've both seen it. Here to give you our thoughts on it as we break it down from start to finish. We do that every week. But that's not the only audio that we do here on the .net site. Every week we do an audio breakdown of WWE's Raw and SmackDown along with TNA's Impact Wrestling. Jason Powell does a Q&A audio on Fridays where members are allowed to ask both wrestling and non-wrestling questions. I do an audio slant on Wednesdays. It's kind of a catch-as-catch-can show. We talk about a little bit of everything, both wrestling that's happening now, and look back around some history stuff, take a tour around the indies, various other things. Jake Barnett and Will Pruitt get together every Wednesday as well for the .net countdown, looking at the best and worst in professional wrestling each and every week. And Jason Powell and I team up every Thursday for .net Weekly. It is our flagship audio show. We review all the news of the week, often great news that's not made its way to the site yet. Spent a lot of time this week talking about the WWE shareholders meeting and the quarterly conference call that they put out, looking at the business model and how things are going there. And you can have access to all of that audio each and every week, plus all the old audio we've done. There's lots of different interviews on the site, including one from a couple of years ago with Jason Powell and WWE's newest star, Brock Lesnar. If you want access to all of those audios each and every week, plus access to the ad-free version of the site, the .NET member forum, and the .NET member blog section, all you need to do is sign up to be a .NET member. Simply head on over to ProWrestling.net, click on the right-hand side of the page for the .NET member sign-up link, click there and we'll get you started. $7.50 will get you 30 days, $5.50. Take $2 off each month if you want to sign up for the annual option. Never been a better time to sign up. There's a lot going on right now, of course, with Brock Lesnar and what he's got going on in WWE. And WWE has promised big things in their shareholders meeting here recently. And the WWE Network is coming up. There's always news breaking about that. We get that stuff to our members first, so it's a great time to sign up. Again, just head to ProWrestling.net, click on the right-hand side of the page on the .net member sign-up link, and we will get you going immediately. I'm going to bring in Jake now. Jake, again, this was the May 4th edition of SmackDown. Take back on the 1st in Toledo, Ohio. We're recording this. Happy Cinco de Mayo to start off with. And kind of appropriate since we had a lot of Alberto Del Rio in this show. He interferes in the first match, interferes in the last match, and now we know that the WWE World Heavyweight Championship title match at Over the Limit will be Del Rio going against World Heavyweight Champion Sheamus. We'll start right there. Do you think that's going to be a great match? Do you expect a great feud out of Sheamus and Alberto Del Rio?
Well, you know, I think they're definitely doing a lot more with Sheamus' character now that he's kind of moving on from this Brian feud. They kind of moved him off to the sidelines as far as character development was concerned. In favor of kind of letting Brian spread his wings a bit as a heel, but you know, now they're kind of really going for broke and establishing, you know, him as the gutty babyface, and I think that's going to work for him. And I'm not entirely confident in Del Rio at this point. I get the kind of same old crap feel from him every time he's on the microphone, and I hope they're able to do something different with him in that regard. But I think he's very good in the ring, so I expect a great match. But I'm not entirely convinced it's going to be a great storyline or a great angle heading into the pay-per-view.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a couple of weeks to see what they're going to do here. They spent a lot of time still this week with Sheamus and Daniel Bryan, and I guess blowing that feud off. I'm not sure how a 2 out of 3 falls match doesn't blow the feud off, but it didn't in this case. And especially after a 2 out of 3 falls match, and then the loser of that match goes on to become the number one contender for the other championship. It seemed a little odd that they went back to Sheamus and Bryan here, but we got good matches out of them tonight, or last night as the case was. We're going to have to see what they do. Del Rio, I was very high on the guy when he came in. I thought he came in with great vignettes. He had great heat. They buried him a little bit in the World Heavyweight title feud with Edge, and that damaged him. And really, you know, I agree that he has not progressed like I had hoped he had, but I think more than anything that feud showed the flaws in his character, and because of the way he was booked, he wasn't really able to to evolve in any significant way, and he's been struggling to get out of that hole ever since, and he's not done so yet. You know, it's always a question, it's almost a chicken and egg type question with some of these guys. Are they not able to deliver what they're given, or are they not given stuff, you know, given enough latitude to be able to deliver, and you never quite can tell. I think Del Rio, again, was a victim of circumstance initially. I don't know how much of this fits on his plate now, but I tend to feel like more of it falls back on him and his character development. The other matches, you know, as far as we'll go through all of these from start to finish, but I guess as far as what, you know, anything we're seeing major, we got what should have been the debut of Damian Sandow tonight, except that he didn't. We didn't actually get to see him wrestle. We got to see him cut a live promo, and I thought he did a good job there. But the other big match, as far as that goes, was the tag match, Cody Rhodes and Kane versus Randy Orton in the Big Show. And we'll break down the match when we get there, but just a quick question before we start going through this thing from start to finish. Is it just me, or did this seem like the, we've got to do something with these guys match?
Yeah, it definitely did not seem like much forethought went into it. It was just kind of, well, we need to fill some time, and these four guys aren't doing anything else, so what the hell, let's just throw them out there. I didn't get the impression that this was the beginning or necessarily even the continuation of any particular storyline. It just felt like, you know, they had a bunch of time to fill in the middle of the show, and, you know, all four of these guys are capable of putting on a good match, so what the hell, let's just throw them out there together. You know, maybe they'll start something with them next week, but it was hard to believe with so little time, you know, heading into the next pay-per-view that they would just kind of nonchalantly throw these guys out there for a tag match, but that is what we got.
It seems like we're going to get those four in continuations again from WrestleMania. Like I said, there's only, I think we've got, what, two shows left, is that right? Three shows left before, as far as weeks, three SmackDowns left before Over the Limit, is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So, you know, it looks like we're just going to get those continuations of those feuds that have been not very good. I mean, Kane and Orton had a very good match at Extreme Rules. You know, Cody and Big Show did what they did with the tables. I mean, I like what they did with the tables match as far as, you know, Show stepping through, and I thought Show played it off perfectly with the, you know, with the look on his face whenever that happened. And, of course, you covered that show and ended audio with Jason that night. I thought it was fun the way they did it, but there's still no heat on that feud. And Cody Rhodes continues to just get killed every time he's on TV. I mean, even winning the Intercontinental Championship at Extreme Rules, he wins the match and then turns around and Big Show just destroys him, puts him through tables, chokeslams, WMD. You know, just, we joked about it a couple of weeks ago, and now it's time to ask the question seriously, you know, who's Jim Baggity Crappy? And I can't figure out what they're doing with Cody Rhodes and why they feel the need to take all the heat off of him, other than this seems to be WWE's MO. But, you know, we'll talk about all those things as we go through and spend some more time on that match whenever we get to it. But I think we both agree, we talked about this right before we started recording, you know, it was a pretty good show. It was a pretty good SmackDown. There was very, very little to complain about. There were quite a few things where you just kind of shrug your shoulders and go, okay, that happened. It's neither a hit nor a miss. It was what it was, and I'm kind of indifferent about it. And then most everything else was pretty good. And, again, very, very little to complain about this week. So, certainly a watchable SmackDown. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. It was, it was one of those SmackDowns where the 2 hours seemed to kind of go by at a pretty brisk pace. You know, we kind of constantly refer back to this, but you know, when the show is slow to progress and you're looking up at the clock going, oh man, there's an hour left of this. You know, that's generally a pretty good indicator that this is a pretty lame show. But this one seemed to move at a pretty good pace, and you know, it kept your attention, and it wasn't, you know, completely offensive in the sense that, well, you know, you'd be embarrassed to be associated with it. So, in all those senses, it was a fun show to watch, and it did contain some great wrestling, too.
Well, let's go through this show. We will use Ryan Kester's report as our guidepost, if we will. Appreciate Kester filling in for us last night. I was off doing another gig, and Jake had plans as well. So, but again, this was taped on May the 1st in Toledo, Ohio, and we get the normal show open, the normal pyro. Josh Matthews, Michael Cole, and Booker T checking in on recap. They recap various points from Raw and promise to have more on those later in the evening. And we start off right off the bat with Sheamus. Sheamus' music hit. He comes to the ring with, of course, holding that championship that he retained at Extreme Rules last week. Sheamus cut a promo and said that he was out there to do what he loves. He said he loves to fight, and it doesn't matter where he is, he just wants to fight. He said that's exactly what he's going to do in a few minutes and put over Brian's performance at Extreme Rules, so that Brian took him, you know, to the limit. And but Brian wanted to finish the job tonight. He said that when Sheamus was asked if he wanted to fight tonight, his answer was simply yes, and he kept saying it over and over, doing the yes chant while he's chanting. Daniel Bryan's music hit. Brian comes out, stands on the stage for a moment, looking very disgusted that Sheamus is stealing his chant, as if it were. Comes to the ring, he even mouth at one point, "Oh, you're going to steal my line." The crowd is really into it. They gets us to our first match of the night. Sheamus defeating Daniel Bryan by DQ at 2 minutes and 47 seconds. They were just starting to get into this when Sheamus knocks Daniel Bryan over the top rope and to the floor. He turns around, and Ricardo Rodriguez, in his tuxedo suit, jumps off the top rope and hit what looked like a picture-perfect crossbody, to me, off the top rope onto Sheamus, causing the DQ. Del Rio slides into the ring at that point, hooks the cross-arm breaker on Sheamus' injured arm from the, of course, kayfabe injured arm from the pay-per-view on Sunday. He, you know, riches on that for a while, so the ref finally causes him to break, and then Daniel Bryan slides back in the ring, and he's yelling about Del Rio interfering, and then he puts the yes lock on Sheamus on that same arm, so Sheamus getting that arm worked over big time. And then we headed into commercial from there with Del Rio and Bryan bickering about it, Sheamus selling the attack in the ring on his arm. Because we got this later, like at first when I'm watching this, I kind of groaned a little bit that we, you know, this is what we're going to start off with. But then, you know, once you figure out you're going to get something more later, and then we did get to delivery later, it kind of paints this in a better light. But kudos to Rodriguez for hitting what looked like, it was kind of fast, and I wasn't really ready for it, but it looked to be a very nice cross body from him.
Yeah, he always kind of seems to impress. He is a trained wrestler, and he does he's taken quite a few pretty spectacular bumps in his WWE career, and he definitely rises to the occasion whenever he's called upon. So yeah, that was a pretty crisp looking crossbody. I don't know how many people could say they could do one better, but probably not many.
Yeah, man, I made a mistake there. So Sheamus was in the ring. Bryan and Del Rio were in the ring. Sheamus was crawling up the ramp, holding on to his arm, was winning the commercial. Again, this is one of those things. This was a setup, so it's like, we can pick this apart, but there's not really a lot to pick apart here because it was step one of the story that ended up having three total steps as the night went on. So we will move past it for right now and talk about it more as we wind back through it through the rest of the show. After this commercial, we have Sheamus backstage in the trainer's room. The trainers are trying to talk to them. It looks like they had the real trainers out there, but maybe next time you should get some actors, because these guys look like they were trying to read off of cue cards. It was the most uncomfortable moment I've ever seen on camera. They were like, "Well, okay, we know you're upset. Just calm down. We're trying to find out how much damage there was to your arm." It was so bad. It was funny to me. Maybe I'm overthinking it a little bit, but I thought it was hilarious how stiff and rigid these guys look.
Yeah, I kind of thought the same thing. It kind of reminded me of those children's shows where they have the bouncing ping pong ball jump over the lyrics on the bottom of the screen, and it was just going way too slow to sound like normal conversation. It was very stiff and awkward, and I'm not sure if they were actors or not, but I think you're right. If this is what the legit trainers sound like, then let's get some fake ones in there.
Yeah, just get a local indie guy to put on a trainer shirt and stand there, it just stuck out. It was so funny. Sheamus is slamming around, "Okay, Sheamus, we just calm down." Really, it was funny to me. We went to the ring then with your new tag team champions, Kofi Kingston and R-Truth, making their entrance. They got a great reaction from the crowd. Toledo had a pretty good reaction most of the night, it sounded like. We get Unico and Camacho out next, and before the match could start, the former WWE tag team champions, Epico and Primo, along with Rosa Mendez, and their new, I guess, manager, AW, came out onto the stage. They stayed there, ended up sitting down in some chairs on the stage to watch our second match of the night, Kofi Kingston and R-Truth defeating Unico and Camacho in 3 minutes and 46 seconds. It was a non-title match, and our first chance to see Camacho, the South Islander Mexican, which, you know, we beat that horse to death. We won't replay it here, but for those who don't know, Camacho is the son of Ming, as he wrestled in WCW, and, or I guess he was Haiku in WWE and Ming in WCW. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was Haku in WWE and Meng in NWA.
Haku is a poem. not a bruiser of a guy. And if you ever get a chance to talk to some of the old timers and they've worked with Haku, ask him. That dude was crazy. I mean, like, legit, probably one of the toughest guys to ever come through wrestling. The stories about him are just absurd. You could hit him with a 2x4 and he would look at you. He's just a tough, tough, tough guy. But they had him booked as a member, or as a, he and Unico fighting out of the barrio to make it to where they are. Pretty good match here from Truth and Kingston and Unico and Camacho. We didn't see a lot of Camacho. Unico did most of the work. What we saw wasn't bad, but again, it wasn't much. So they protected him pretty well here. Kingston and Truth get the win here after, Camacho was in the ring. Unico attempted to get to interfere, but Kingston did a pop-up hurricanrana. He jumped over Truth, who helped lift him over, and that hit the rana that sent Unico to the floor, and Kofi rolled to the ring to the floor as well. And then Truth hit the little Jimmy on Camacho, the pay dirt move that Shelton Benjamin used to get the win there, while Primo and Epico and his crew, their whole crew, AW, stood up there on the ramp and talked. They never interfered. They never got involved. I think it was a pretty good match. They protected Camacho pretty well. But the thing that I take from this more than anything else, and I find it hard to believe, so tell me if I'm wrong here, but Jake, I think we've got a tag team feud with an actual story in WWE.
Yeah, I mean, blown away by that. I completely unexpected. I mean, past history would indicate that we're just going to get nothing out of the tag division, but it does look like they're attempting to build something with, Primo and Epico and the tag champs. So I'm looking forward to see where they go. You know, I like the signing with AEW, and it sounds like he's going to be building a stable. So, you know, it's nice that we're actually going to get some storylines on the undercard, because I think that's really one of the major key elements that's been missing from WWE for quite a while now. So, but I'm optimistic about where this could be going.
Yeah, it was it was a short match, but it was over 2 minutes, which is not always something that happens within WWE on SmackDown. But yeah, I guess more than anything else, even if there are things to pick about on this that you complain about, I'm just so excited to see an actual storyline develop in the tag division, even if it's something that may end up being cheesy. It's something. It's effort. It's using the tag titles for, you know, as an actual prop instead of just something for random guys to hold and to use at house shows. It seems to matter at least a teeny tiny bit in baby steps, right? I mean, you got to use baby steps to get where you're going. And if you don't know, AW, of course, it was Abraham Washington is what he's been working under. But here is, and he's just going by the initials AW, but his group is the All World group. So there's like a stable forming there. I'm sure some more signees coming to that group eventually. After commercial, we get Brodus Clay making his entrance with the Funkadactyls. And, now we're getting them introducing each other. The entrance is getting longer and longer now. It's really getting played out. We get the traditional thing of the ladies introducing Brodus Clay, and then Brodus now introduces them as the Funkadactyls. They come out and dance, and they do the whole entrance. And from that point, it was pretty much the same thing. I'm surprised a little bit by some of the gyrations of the Funkadactyls as dancers, simply because of, the effort to go PG, and they do bring in kids at the end for to dance with Brodus and ladies, and so just some of it is just a little surprising that it can be a little bit more gyrating than I would expect for a PG product, especially when they're reaching out to kids specifically with this act. But whatever. After he made his entrance, Vicky Guerrero comes out and introduces the man who's going to derail the funk train, Jack Swagger. And so Swagger and Vicky and Dolph Ziggler come out for our third match of the night. Brodus Clay with the Funk Attack was defeating Jack Swagger with Dolph Ziggler and Vicky Guerrero by countout in a minute and 41 seconds. To me, the funniest part of this was hearing Michael Cole say there's a lot of funk out here. There's the Funkadactyls, the Funkasaurus. What are they calling the crowd now? It's the Funk of something. What was it again? Do you remember?
I am drawing a blank.
The Funketeers.
There you go.
The Funketeers.
Yep.
Like the Mouseketeers. The Funketeers. That's what they're calling, I guess, his fans, the Funketeers. Cole says there's a lot of funk out here, and he ran through all that, and if you say it fast enough, it doesn't sound like funk. It sounds like something that sounds a lot like it, but not necessarily PG either. Pretty much of the story of this match, Swagger gets in a couple of licks, but pretty much of all Brodus Clay. Brodus gets knocked to the floor at one point by Swagger. Dolph Ziggler tries to attack. He springboards off of the steel stairs and gets a headbutt out of the air. Brodus Clay headbutts him, knocks him down. We're reminded immediately again exactly how great of a bumper Dolph Ziggler is. That dude could sell ice to Eskimos. I swear to God he could. Brodus gets back in the ring. He ends up shoving Swagger off of him and then catches him when Swagger jumps at him, hits his big suplex toss, starts to go for the splash, but Swagger rolls to the floor, collects Vicky and Dolph, and they back up the ramp for the count-out victory. Then Funkasaurus brings in about four or five kids, and they have a little dance-off in the ring, and everybody, you know, is happy and having a good time or whatever. This feud continues. It's a real feud for Clay, I guess, with both of these guys. I assume we're going to end up seeing a handicap match at some point so they can get over him, get over on him at some point. But this ends with a pay-per-view match, an eight-minute pay-per-view match, and him standing over a broken Dolph Ziggler, who should be in the championship hunt, doesn't it?
It sure seems like it's going that way. I mean, it'll either be, Ziggler or Swagger that's kind of laid out at the end of that pay-per-view match. I'm not sure which way they're going to go yet. But, it really seems like they're just trying to cash in on whatever they can get out of Brodus Clay before they probably send him back down to developmental again or something. Because it sure doesn't seem like he's made a whole lot of progress in the arena of working a longer match. I mean, anytime he's asked to sell in the ring, it does not look like anything close to his natural state for him. You know, I don't know how they're going to get an 8-minute pay-per-view match out of him if he has to do a whole lot of selling. He's definitely built for the squash matches, and he's very good at that. But we have yet to see him really succeed in any other environment. But I like the character. I mean, you know, they do seem to be getting as much mileage out of that entrance as they can. But at some point, you know, it's kind of become all hat and no cap, as Texans like to say. And I'm waiting for him to have a great match, but I don't know if he's quite up to it at this point. I mean, it's nice that he has Ziggler and Swagger to bounce around for him, but I don't know who else will be able to make him look as good. It's kind of concerning. You know, I thought we would get more from him at this point, but I just don't see it.
Yeah, that's kind of the problem with making him this happy-go-lucky baby face and why I was, one of the reasons why I was really upset that this is the way they went instead of going with the monster heel. The monster heel selling is different, when you see Kane sell, and Kane is very good at what he does. I don't mean to disparage Kane here, but anytime you have a monster heel who just gets beat up and kind of sits there when they're selling, it works. If that's the character, is just this kind of unstoppable force, character that, does that make sense? The selling is a different, it works differently when you're that character than, say, when you're this character, where if you're the babyface, you have to show real, vulnerability. You have to, because that's what makes babyfaces so great, is they're able to fight back from being beat up, and it's hard for a guy like Brodus to really get that across, just because of the nature of what he is, and that's why it's tough having him as this babyface. Whereas if you have him as the monster heel, he can sell exactly like he's selling right now, and it works because the character is different. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I mean, I get where you're going. It's also kind of, you know, bizarre for me, you know, just because when he was out there at WrestleMania 27 with Del Rio, and he was working his way out of NXT, you know, kind of right into that main event angle with Edge and Del Rio. He definitely seemed like he was showing a wider range of both offense and, you know, he was taking a lot more bumps at that point, too, because, you know, he was just bumping around for Edge and Christian. So yeah, it almost feels like he's regressed a bit, and I'm just surprised by that.
Yeah, you make a point. And when he was on NXT, he had some pretty good 4 or 5 minute matches and looked like he could sell there. So I don't know. We need to see him in a longer match. It's hard to say, well, he can't sell after a minute and 30 seconds, you know, and then a 10-second count out. It's we're limited with what we've got to work with since he's taken on this new character. So I hope we see something longer soon so we have, you know, the more data you have, the more likely you are to make an accurate analysis. And so I'd like a few more minutes from the guy and have some better data. But we'll see what happens. After a commercial break, we get the announced team sets up the John Cena recap is what it was. It was they showed him getting beat up by Lesnar and had to do the black and white footage because of the blood. And they show all that, but then, of course, it's all to set up what happened with John Laurinaitis and Lord Tensai at the end of Raw, with Laurinaitis announcing that John Cena's opponent at Over the Limit will be him, will be John Laurinaitis, and then, of course, the attack and then hitting him with a chair in the arm and all that good stuff. I thought this was pretty good Monday night. Again, they were able to do the fast cuts here and put the real heavy music with it to add some more emphasis, and it was it made it look even better than it did Monday night. Just quickly, what do you think about Laurinaitis versus Cena? Obviously it's not Johnny Ace. It's funny, I had to sit through a Shane Douglas interview earlier today or earlier this week, and they were talking about the dynamic dudes with Johnny Ace and Shane Douglas back in the day. I don't think we're going to get that John Laurinaitis. I certainly believe it'll be some sort of no DQ match that allows Tensai to do the majority of the work, but what did you think of the segment on Raw and what they did with the video here?
Well, you know, Will and I talked about this on the countdown, and I talked about it a bit, with Jason, in the Extreme Rules audio. But the way that they followed up the pay per view, which set a very dark, kind of brutal atmosphere, and then they kind of followed up on Monday with, Cena in a sling and doing the same, happy-go-lucky, smiling, cutting jokes on Laurinaitis and whatnot. I don't know. That really did not sit well with me. I thought they had gone, to great effort on Sunday night to kind of set the tone that, Cena was beat up and there was no way, that he could compete. The following night he was injured. He was saying he was going away for a while, and then Monday night it's like, well, I have some strained muscles, but everything's okay. And then he just starts, going right into another promo on Laurinaitis, and that kind of bothered me a bit. I mean, I'm not necessarily upset with the fact that he is, just inside of a bubble, going to be facing Laurinaitis with Tensai as what do you want to call him, the enforcer or the henchman or whatever you want to call him. That doesn't bother me that much. But, the idea that you would have him have that kind of match with Lesnar on Sunday night and then on Monday just have him blow it off like there was absolutely nothing, that nothing happened, it just kind of bothered me. It made me you want to suspend, disbelief to some degree with pro wrestling. But, what we saw on Sunday night was probably the most brutal match we've seen from WWE in years. And to have Cena basically kind of wipe the thing off the table on Monday was just kind of a bummer to me. I was hoping that we would get more out of that storyline they were trying to tell with Cena, with his self-doubt and whatnot. But it seems like they've completely blown that off and gone in a different direction. And I thought, that kind of insulted the intelligence of the viewers.
And it makes Brock Lesnar's reported blow-up in the back seem a little more, relevant. I mean, it sounds like he made some good points there. And we don't know There's rumor that it was all work. There's rumor that it was all shoot. There's rumor that it falls somewhere in between. We don't really know. But for those who haven't heard, supposedly Brock Lesnar came back. Well, it happened. The question is why it happened more than anything else. He came back to the curtain. He was upset about John Cena's promo afterwards. It was his understanding that, you know, Cena was going to win. He was going to put him over, but that Cena was going to be stretchered out. That didn't happen. He ends up cutting this promo. And then, like you said, he comes out Monday night and kind of blows off the whole thing. He sells the arm injury as, you know, I'm hurt, but I'm not injured. And he made that delineation. And, you know, it allowed them to have the shortcut to be able to beat down, to allow, you know, Laurinaitis to get over on Cena Monday night. And so they used it that much. But, you know, like you said, it's hard to believe that they go through that brutal of a match and then pretty much so all they get out of it is just enough to allow a guy who wrestled 100 years ago, and most people who are watching now don't even realize wrestled, you know, other than the vague comments that kept come out from CM Punk and that sort of thing. Yeah, my guess is if you polled 100 people in the WWE audience in attendance on any given night, you might find what do you think, two that could tell you what John Laurinaitis means, that he was the dynamic dude, maybe two, maybe one.
Yeah.
You know, so, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, maybe a few people might remember the shot that CM Punk took at him about his skateboard or something. But that would be the only people that would understand what was going on.
Right. That's what I'm saying. You know, most people probably look at him and just think he's just a suit. You know, he's just a guy who, you know, he's like a Vince McMahon who was a boss who decided to get involved, or a Shane McMahon, Stephanie McMahon, whatever, you know, who are office people who decided to get involved or allowed to get involved or whatever. So, yeah, it is kind of upsetting, but the best they were able to get out of it was just to allow John Laurinaitis to beat him up a little bit. And even then, it still took two other people to do it. So, I see your point there. I was looking at it, I guess, more within the bubble. I didn't connect it to the previous night because they had moved on with Lesnar and Triple H. We'll talk about that in a minute. What was probably the only serious groan-worthy moment of the night. We'll get there when we get there, though. But, yeah, you're right. When you connect the two things together, they did leave him. They did leave Lesnar looking. I mean, I don't know that it hurt Lesnar all that much, but it does stretch the mind, it just stretched credibility to its breaking point. When they came back from the video, Ryan Kester has in his report that Michael Cole defended Laurinaitis' actions in that video, and I disagree with that, and I'm not picking on Kester here, I don't point that out, but I wanted to make this point, is that, you know, Cole said what happened was is that Laurinaitis bet everything on Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar failed to deliver, he failed to defeat John Cena, and he snapped under the pressure. And, you know, and here's the proof of it, that he's not here tonight because he took a personal day. For me, it didn't come across as defending Laurinaitis so much. And again, I'm not picking on Kester. I just want to bring this point out. But it does show this very, very subtle and continuing, for want of a better term, babyface turn from Michael Cole. He's not really gone babyface. He's just not healing it up as much as he's been in the past. And quite frankly, he's getting pretty good. I mean, I always thought Cole, before the heel turn, before all that silliness, was competent. And I think in a lot of ways, the heel turn, even though it drove us crazy, I think it might have helped him a little bit, because now I think he's gone from competent to a pretty good announcer.
Yeah, no, I agree. Michael Cole, when he was not obnoxious, I always thought was a pretty good announcer. And maybe it's just that I was so tired of his act as a heel that, you know, by comparison, this just seems so much better. But it definitely does feel like, you know, he's a heck of a lot much, you know, more tolerable to listen to now. And he's kind of backing off a little bit of the ostentatious kind of heel stuff. But I'm enjoying his work on right now, you know, a heck of a lot more than I was 6 months ago, that's for sure.
We cut backstage. Daniel Bryan and Alberto Del Rio are arguing. Ricardo Rodriguez is there. They're arguing in front of Eve. They're in, you know, I guess Eve is running the show tonight because Laurinaitis has taken that personal day. Eve looked like she was ready for, you know, myhotteacherporn.com or something was the way she was dressed. They were arguing over who should get to face Sheamus later. bickering back and forth. Daniel Bryan demanded it. He even asked him who he thought he was to demand it. She said she would check with the ringside doctors later, and if Sheamus was able to fight, then she would make a determination. And then she threw both guys out of her office. And then we saw Damian Sandow walking to the ring to be able to make his appearance. What'd you think of Eve's outfit there, Jake?
Yeah, I think you nailed it there. She definitely looked a little more risque than you would have imagined would fly on a PG show. But, you know, I guess that's part of her, you know, her new persona. She's kind of flaunting her assets as much as possible to get what she wants. So I guess it fit in that regard, but it definitely did look like they were going for some hot for teacher kind of thing with the outfit. But I guess we'll have to let that slide.
Yeah, and if my wife is listening, I don't really know if myhotteacherporn.com is real. I made it up. I promise, David, really. After commercial, we get Damian Sandow making his ring entrance. His music is the Alleluia Chorus, not a vocal version of it, but the Alleluia Chorus from Handel's Messiah, just an instrumental version. He comes all the way to the ring. Got a great look about him, the long robe and the towel stuffed around the neck there, and the long hair and the beard. He's got a great look about him. He climbs up on the ring apron with a microphone and cuts a promo. And the extent of the promo is that he is not going to be wrestling. He was supposed to wrestle Derek Bateman, who he referred to as a miscreant, which Booker T does not know. Somebody send Booker T a dictionary, please. He called him a miscreant and a simple-minded ignoramus. Which Bateman, of course, took great displeasure in and took great umbrage with as well. He said that he was not going to lower himself to wrestle someone like that because that would be an insult to the enlightenment that he was bringing to everyone. He did the "you're welcome" bit, dropped down, and backed up the entrance ramp with his music playing. So we did not get the in-ring debut of Damian Sandow, but we did get the SmackDown debut of, or as far as in the arena debut of Damian Sandow. Jake, I'll let you go first. What do you think?
Yeah, I kind of enjoyed that. I don't know if this is going to be, you know, his bit where he's going to refuse to wrestle people because he thinks they're below him in terms of intelligence, which, you know, is actually pretty smart if he's going to be the arrogant, intellectual heel, because when somebody finally does get his hands on him, it'll seem meaningful. But I definitely enjoyed the promo. You know, he's definitely living up to the labels he's given himself, and I'm looking forward to see where they're going with him.
Yeah, I think he can milk this for a little while. I think he can get a couple of weeks out of this. Certainly probably through the next pay-per-view, I would think he should be able to come out and refuse to wrestle the miscreant, simple-minded ignoramus in the ring and get away with it. And then, like I said, somebody eventually is going to get their hands on him, and it's going to mean a lot. He should still go over there, and my guess is that he will. I was impressed. I was wondering if he was going to be able to do that promo. Again, we don't know how many takes it took to do those pre-tapes that we saw, the vignettes leading up to his making his debut. He was able to deliver a fantastic promo here. I don't know if he's memorizing lines, if he's cutting that from the hip. If he's shooting that from the hip, good for him. I was impressed, and it'll be interesting to see what they do with him. I think that if he's got good in-ring skills, and I don't remember him much from his run before, but from what people have said, he was fair, he was decent in the ring, and if he's gotten better, and this is a pretty good character he's pulling off right now, we could have a potential mid-carder star, come up, just spring up out of nowhere. So interesting stuff on SmackDown, seeing these guys debut. Derek Bateman grabbed the microphone at that point, though, and said that he had won a match on NXT that assured him a match on SmackDown, which is not true. He actually won a match on NXT that assured him a tag title shot with, well, one of the current tag team champions, R-Truth. So, but they just swept that under the ring, and, you know, these are not the droids you're looking for. But he said he had won this match, and so he deserved his match on SmackDown. He actually already had his debut match on SmackDown in which he was killed by Mark Henry. So let's do it all over again. He demanded a match, kept demanding a match, and so he got one. Our fourth match of the night, Ryback squashes Derek Bateman in 1:07. Same stuff from Ryback. He hits his you know, the big boot and a backpack stunner and the stiff clothesline, and then that muscle buster or you know, Samoan drop finisher for the win. He beat somebody meaningful this week, so I'm not, you know, I've been very critical of this, and I caught some flack for it in the forum about it from one of the members, and you know, my point was that with Ryback squashing guys you've never heard of, and then you have guys like, say, Antonio Cesaro coming out and beating guys you have heard of, it makes Ryback's win seem a little bit less impressive, or at least here tonight, he beat a guy we have heard of, so this is a step in the right direction for the guy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's obvious they want to keep him in these short squash matches for the time being. You know, I don't know what the long-term plans are for him, but this win was more meaningful than the others, where he beat, you know, very, you know, maybe purposely scrawny-looking, you know, independent wrestlers from you know, whatever local promotions that WWE could find in whatever localities they were in, so... You know, it definitely didn't look all that impressive, but at least with Bateman, he's got some exposure, and it doesn't look like he's just beaten complete scrubs. So this was a much more impressive win in that regard, but it definitely was basically the same match that we've seen from him in the past.
Yeah, I'm not against the squash match. It's just you have to be consistent across all of your squashes. If this person is squashing Tyson Kidd and this person's squashing, you know, Fred from the local indie group, it's a different squash. It means two different things, and especially if, you know, the guy squashing Fred from the local indie group is supposed to be this, you know, borderline 300-pound monster. So this is a step in the right direction for him. He doesn't have to necessarily get into a feud right away. As long as they continue to increase his opponent each and every week, I think they'll be okay. After commercial, fifth match of the night, and it was the top of our second hour, Kane and Cody Rhodes, Big Show and Randy Orton defeating Kane and Cody Rhodes in 14 minutes and 13 seconds. We had one commercial break in the middle of this match. A very good match. I mean, it was entertaining. We talk about things all the time. We just, even within the show, we talk about things happening inside of the bubble and then connections to the grander WWE universe. Inside of a bubble, it was a pretty good match. All four guys worked hard. I mean, they have in the past. We got a fun finishing segment or a fun sequence at the end with Kane hitting his top rope punch clothesline thing on Big Show. He turns around to Randy Orton, who slides in the ring and hits a RKO. And then Cody Rhodes takes Orton out, knocks him to the ground, goes for the beautiful disaster kick on Big Show. Big Show slaps him out of the air, chops him out of the air, and then hits him with the WMD for the victory. I mean, Rhodes wasn't made to look awful here, but he did take the pinfall. I guess they're protecting Kane, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But it was an okay match. It was fun to watch, but it just doesn't mean anything. Again, at the top of the show, we talked about it. It seems just like the, oh crap, we got to get these four guys on the show because we're going to use them against the next pay per view. Put them in a tag match. Yeah, that'll work.
Yeah, but, you know, if that's the case, why would you have the babyfaces go over again? You know, that's the thing that kind of caught me. You know, if we're going to continue both of these feuds into the next pay-per-view, which I can't believe, because, I mean, they've had several moments now that have felt like the blow-off for the Orton and Kane feud, and I can't imagine there's much more, you know, mileage on the tire treads of Big Show and Rhodes. I mean, I don't know, if you're going to carry this to the next pay-per-view for all four of these guys, you know, why have the babyfaces go over here? Wouldn't it be more surprising and get a little bit more heat for these two feuds to have, you know, have Rhodes get a surprise win or even Kane? I mean, I don't know. I can't imagine these feuds are going to mean anything by the time we get to Over the Limit.
Yeah, I don't know. Like you said, Kane and Orton, I guess, has more legs in and of itself, because they've at least traded a win there. And I guess Cody and Big Show have technically, but again, Big Show has looked strong every time. And so, I don't know. It's one of those things where you shrug your shoulders and go, okay, you put on a great match, and I appreciate that because I enjoy great matches. But it didn't mean anything. So it's, you know, as good as it was almost like a waste of 15 minutes. And It doesn't make it bad, but it just, you know, you. I believe in doing everything for a purpose. You got those television shows, you're out there trying to do things with it. This just didn't seem to have any purpose other than to have all four guys appear on camera to make sure the fans remember who they are. But if you don't know who Big Show, Randy Orton, Kane, and Cody Rhodes are, you've only been watching for a week, maybe. And I don't know how you make it to this show and not know at least who some of those guys are, if not all four. So it's a little bit strange for me that they did this. And like I said, why put the baby faces over if they're trying to continue these feuds? I'm making an assumption there. I don't know anything for sure, but I mean when you put those four guys together here in this tag match, and there's only a couple of weeks left until the next pay per view, there's not a lot of time to do anything else with them, is there?
Yes, I mean, it sure doesn't seem like it. I mean, I don't know, how you can make these feuds any more personal than they already are. I mean, they're both WrestleMania feuds. You know, they lasted through Extreme Rules, which is generally, the point where, the things kind of get moved aside and start anew with new feuds, and now they continue it onto this week. So, I mean, could they, scramble it up and do something different starting next week heading into Over the Limit, sure, but it definitely seems like they're going to be, carrying this forward, and it's just surprised me that they would, put the baby faces over so decisively here when, they look so strong already in these views.
Yeah, we'll see what they do over the next couple of weeks. We cut that stage to Matt Stryker standing outside the training room. Sheamus comes out with his arm all taped up, his shoulder really bandaged up. He said that he's going to fight tonight. It doesn't matter who. He made his way, or he left like he was headed towards the ring. Stryker looked at the camera and said, well, there you go. There you heard it. We're going to have a fight tonight. Ryan, in his report, said, did anyone else just have a flashback to Triple H bursting out of the trainer's room to go fight a heel Sheamus? I didn't until he pointed it out, but after he pointed it out, he's got a point there, doesn't he?
Yeah, he sure seems like it, because I think, Triple H was even selling the shoulder at that point.
Yeah.
So it was a little bit of deja vu when you put it into that perspective. Yeah, definitely. It's definitely interesting to see, Sheamus kind of finally embrace the fact that he is a babyface and kind of do some of this gutty stuff where he's actually willing to do some selling for people and establish a potential shortcoming heading into a match. They've kind of portrayed him as invincible, in most of his feuds since he's been a babyface. So it's nice to see him kind of embrace the idea of having, some adverse conditions that he has to, get through to get a win. So I'm liking that part of it, but it did definitely seem like, deja vu for the Triple H thing.
After commercial, our sixth match of the night, Layla defeating Natalya at 1 minute and 56 seconds. Actually, a very good Divas match. Layla, who I always was very high on. Before her injury, people were going, but I always thought she could work. I thought she did a fantastic job of selling. She was probably one of the better sellers in the Divas division, and her and Natty worked a pretty good match here. I mean, it was sub 2 minutes, so you can only get so much out of it. Layla wins with the layout neckbreaker. But, I would love to see these two go for 5 or 6 minutes. I think they could have a really good match just based on this 2-minute thing that we saw here.
Yeah, I would agree with that statement. We all know what Natalya's capable of when given the opportunity. I mean, she was and continues to be one of the best, women workers around. And Layla, even before her injury, was making quite a few strides towards becoming a great worker herself. And, I think she's showing that she's still, she must have done some good training and got some, busted all the rust off of herself before she made the return, because she looked really sharp as well. So I want to see a lengthy feud for the Divas, that actually, shows us what these girls are capable of in a longer match. Whether it's with Layla and Natalya, I don't know. But I know they're a lot more capable than what we see on TV every week, and I hope they get a chance to show that off, because it seems like, I think we've gone over this a bunch of times in the past, but they definitely leave a lot of money on the table in terms of, young female fans by presenting the Divas the way that they do.
Yeah, know, I don't think either one of us are advocating a, you know, the Divas should headline a pay-per-view. That'd be kind of cool, but I don't think that that's the smartest business move. I don't think anybody's really, you know, calling for that. The point we're making is that there's an opportunity here to do more than what they're doing, and these ladies showed that here. They showed that they could really go in the ring if given an opportunity, and I'd like to see more out of them. And it's good work here. It's it's 2 minutes. It's hard to recommend something that was only 2 minutes long, but one of the better Divas matches. A lot of mat wrestling here, and I just had a good time. And let's just be clear about this. Layla Natalya, not bad to look at either. It's kind of a win-win situation no matter what you're up for. We come backstage to where Oksana and Antonio Cesaro were getting ready for a photo shoot. Eve was back there. She was running the whole thing, micromanaging it, wanted to make sure there was the right filter on the camera, the right lighting was available, had them putting makeup on, helping them with their poses. And then she decided that Antonio was a little dry, is how she put it. He needed to be oiled up some. The makeup lady who had been doing Oksana's makeup came over with the oil, started to do it, and he said, no, I don't want you to do it. She called Teddy Long over and said, Teddy, you do it. Teddy said, you got to be kidding me. I'm not rubbing oil on another man. He said, Teddy, don't be ridiculous. You haven't done anything at all tonight. Now rub oil on him. And Teddy finally did. He rubbed some on his back. After he'd rubbed it on his back, Antonio kind of turned towards him a little bit, and Oksana said, Teddy, how about some right here, and pointed to the top of Antonio's pec, where Teddy put it in his hand, turned his back a little bit, and basically kind of chopped Antonio a little bit, just slapped him right in the chest with the oil and just rubbed it right there on his chest before going to commercial. I got an email from a guy last week, one of our listeners, who said that that my hate for Teddy Long is a little bit too much, that I hate him more than the average fan probably does. He said he's a great sympathetic character. I disagree. But for the first time, I actually had sympathy for Teddy, not for Teddy the character, but for Teddy Long, the person, to have to rub oil on Antonio Cesaro. I believe I would have been like, I believe my reaction would have been the same as Teddy's if I had been asked to do that, which was, you got to be kidding me, right? I'm not rubbing oil on another man. So kudos, I guess, to Teddy Long for changing my mind this week and making me at least have a little bit of sympathy for him. What about you, Jake?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely seems like they're trying to make out, you know, Teddy to be as sympathetic as possible, and that's fine. You know, I just don't really buy into the whole storyline. I mean, I understand that, you know, Teddy lost the match at WrestleMania. Now they're going to torture him by, you know, in order to keep his job. But they haven't even touched on the whole point of the storyline since day one. I mean, Laurinaitis threatened to pull money from his grandkids, and you know, they haven't really even touched on that since that first promo. So, I mean, at this point, it just seems like they did that very personal angle regarding, you know, Teddy's grandkids' college fund just to get a few weeks out of torturing him on television. And I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of Teddy Long. I don't dislike Teddy Long. You know, when he's just the GM and he's out there making matches, I have no problems with him. You know, but it just seems like he's, every time they put him in a storyline like this, he's just portrayed as the biggest moron on the planet who falls for all of these tricks from women, and, you know, he's just gullible. And, I mean, we've seen it so many times now, it's just hard for me to get too invested in another one of these storylines with him. But, I mean, what they did here was fine. I mean, it definitely, made you feel bad for the guy. But just from the big picture standpoint of this storyline, it's hard for me to get invested in it, that's all.
Yeah, and this person also emailed me back and pointed out to, Jason and Wade Keller of the Torch said in the Feeding Torch livecast that we post here on the site, about how he was sympathetic and all these sorts of things. It was fun watching him do those things. And on a certain level, I don't disagree. Again, this kind of goes back to the things we were talking about earlier about within the bubble and then the greater connection. Teddy sells this stuff great. I mean, a couple of weeks ago when they were in London and they had him in the Beefeater uniform and he just stood there and took it and never cracked a smile, never blinked, never did anything, that was great. In a bubble, I mean, he was able to do that. And walking around, if you saw the aftermath video that they do, after SmackDown goes off the air last week, I think it was, last week where he had been dusting in that maid's outfit, and they catch up with him again, and he's back doing it. He's like, no, excuse me, I have to get back to work, and he goes back to feather dusting. I mean, you know, in a bubble, taken completely out of context, that moment is kind of fun and funny to watch. But I think you hit the nail on the head when you compare it to everything else. Is if you didn't see Teddy Long go through this, well, this is probably the third time they've done this sort of thing where he's attached to a woman and then gets in trouble either because of it or she plays into it. You know, if you've seen the other two times, then this is just the same old thing all over again, and it's hard to get excited about it. But, you know, I guess if you haven't seen those before, it's a little bit easier. I think when we talk about him not being sympathetic, I think more than anything else, what we're referring to is the ultimate payoff for this whenever he gets his revenge, because we know it's coming. He'll end up getting some wrestler to, you know, to pin Cesaro at some point to get his revenge, you know, and probably plant one on Exana or something. You know, he'll get his revenge. It just won't be very satisfying because he's not a sympathetic character. They are putting him in sympathetic situations, and I have sympathy for the guy having to rub down another guy with oil. And Antonio Cesaro, the former Claudio Castagnoli, is kind of a, I mean, that guy's a little bit of a nut, so I can only imagine what he said to Teddy after the cameras quit rolling. But, you know, he's not a character that you're going to latch onto and really invest in. You know, say like a John Cena or a CM Punk or somebody that you can, when the chips are down, you really want to see that guy fight his way back. I just don't think Teddy invokes that emotion in people, at least not in me. But we'll spend more time talking about this than they did actually selling it. So we'll move on to AJ and Caitlin. After commercial, we get those two backstage. AJ apologizes to Caitlin for slapping her, saying, you know, that wasn't me. I've not been myself. I apologize. Caitlin said that was fine. She knew it wasn't AJ, and that's why, you know, she was okay with it, and she was going to forgive her. She said, but this pity party with you over Daniel Bryan has to stop. And then AJ, I had to go back and watch it a second time because I thought, you know, I hope she slapped her leg to do the whole, you know, slap the leg to get the big smacking sound, or either that or she just slapped the hell out of AJ. And I went back and watched it a second time. Jake, she slapped the hell out of AJ. Or, excuse me, out of Caitlin.
Yeah, she really did. It almost looked like she, like, you know, she reached for the floor and then came all the way back up and around. I mean, it was a
huge, it was a roundhouse.
Yeah, it was like a huge cartwheel kind of slap. And, you know, Caitlin told him like she got hit with a half a house, and I think probably legitimately because it looked like it. And, yeah, I mean, it was a good segment. I'm interested to see where they're going with AJ, especially in regards to Brian. You know, they didn't really follow up on what had happened on Sunday, where she, you know, she kind of walked out from behind some, you know, I don't know if it was equipment cases or whatever it was backstage, to show that she was still kind of following Daniel Bryan around backstage. They didn't really touch on that too much, but, you know, I still think this is one of the more compelling storylines that they're doing on SmackDown right now, and I hope they continue to follow up on it, and get some mileage out of it week after week, because, you know, AJ definitely seems to be able to kind of cut, you know, do the bipolar thing, the schizophrenic thing, well, you know, where she, you know, she's one character one moment and then just kind of flies off the handle at the next. So I'm liking what AJ's doing, and I think Caitlin, you know, being, you know, a long-term storyline and probably real-life friend, it's working for her, and I think, you know, it could benefit both of them.
Yeah, they are real-life friends. They've on Twitter all the time talking to each other, and they travel together and all those sorts of things. And I'm sure Caitlin's going out of her way to put over AJ here to sell for a friend. But she has to do a whole lot of selling. I'm pretty sure any of us would have been like, holy cow, that shit hurt.
slapped
her big time. It was unbelievable. And Caitlin went down, and like I said, she told her like she'd been able to have a house, and that's probably a great way to do it. But it was half sale, half legit. There's no question about that. Yeah, AJ's been great. She has been great week after week. She's had a couple of moments where she seemed to struggle to find her character exactly, but I think she's found it now. I assume we're going to see more of that play out as well on Raw now that Daniel Bryan is going to go over there and go after the WWE Championship, which I think the Internet is still trying to recover from Monday. Once that was figured out, it was going to be Punk versus Bryan for that title. I think we're going to get a little bit of both here. I think we'll get AJ with Daniel Bryan on Raw, which will play into some things that are happening on SmackDown. My guess is her and Caitlin are going to end up in the ring sooner rather than later. And, Caitlin's not been very compelling since she won NXT either. This is the first time she's been involved in something that I'm interested in seeing her involved with again. So, I mean, AJ is doing a lot of good right now in a lot of ways, both for herself, both with a potential addition to whatever's going on with Punk and Bryan as that feud kicks off, and by making Caitlin relevant again. So, nothing but good things to say for AJ. We get the Raw rebound at this point, which is Brock Lesnar's attack on Triple H. I'm going to try real hard not to go off here, but somebody said this was going to happen. It may have even been Ryan Kester that said it was going to happen, but somebody suggested this was going to happen, and whoever it is should be taken out back and beat because they booked it. Now when you see the video of Brock Lesnar putting the Kimura on the Triple H, they've added in a bone-snapping sound. That insults me more than anything I've seen in a long time. There's absolutely... It didn't happen on Raw. The sound was not there on Raw. To put it in the video, you know, if you do it with a heavy moment in a song, you know, if your music goes dun, you know, right when it happens and you do the quick shots where you show it happened three or four times from a couple of different angles and you imply the sound in the music, I'm okay with that. That's great editing. That's how you get things across. But to actually go in and dub a twig breaking might be the most offensive thing I've seen on television in a while. It's offensive to my intelligence. Am I out of line here?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I remember, you know, a number of years ago where they had... I think it was Triple H that broke JR's arm with a hammerlock, I think, on Raw during the interview segment. And they added, it wasn't there in the initial segment, and then they added it in for the replay that was right after the commercial. And it was literally like 4 minutes apart. And it's like, I didn't hear that snap the first time. And then they kind of dubbed it in. And it's the same sound effect here. Limbs don't sound like, like tree limbs.
Like limbs.
When they break. Yeah. So it's really insulting to the intelligence of fans. And, you know, even the angle that they had the Kimura on didn't look all that dangerous. So it was really insulting and over the top.
Yeah, God, you know, I appreciate the effort of trying to do something, but, it's a little bit insulting to expect me to believe that suddenly now there's the snap in there and like it wasn't there before. I mean, it would have been cheesy if they did it on Raw the first time, but if they did it on Raw the first time, at least you can turn around and say, well, that's why it's there now. And I understand it's live TV, and so they probably couldn't have pulled it off, but then that's all the more reason why you don't go back and friggin' add it in. It's unnecessary. I thought that Triple H did a good job of, you know, holding it in one position and then letting it, you know, fold over at the last minute to give that idea that it had happened. They didn't need to add the sound in. It was just absolutely unnecessary and very frustrating to see happen. It, I mean, it's not anything to, you know, to quit watching over anything crazy like that, but it just insults the intelligence. Like, it doesn't sound like that. I've heard bones break. It does sound like that. It just doesn't. But then we get Michael Matthews and Cole. They recast everything. Cole, again, going back to this sort of babyface character that he's playing now again, calls for Lesnar to be fired one more time. So they had not heard anything that as far as, you know, Lesnar was still on the roster as far as they knew, and they expected to hear something at least by Monday Night Raw. So look for some follow-up to that. My guess is that Triple H won't fire him so he can get his hands on him, presumably at SummerSlam. Alberto Del Rio makes his ring entrance at that point, and then the announcers kind of recapped everything, showed video of everything that went down earlier tonight with Del Rio and Daniel Bryan attacking Sheamus in the evening. Del Rio joined the announce team after the commercial break. Daniel Bryan's in the ring. Sheamus makes his entrance for our seventh and final match of the night, Sheamus defeating Daniel Bryan for the World Heavyweight Championship to retain that at 13 minutes and 29 seconds. One commercial break in the middle of this match as well. The story here, of course, the continued assault on Sheamus' shoulder. Daniel Bryan gets the wrap off at one point. chain that sold very well. Brian worked all of his offense that, you know, that makes him arguably one of the best in the world, if not the best in the world, in the ring. It's been a long time since we've been able to really see this guy go, since joining WWE, and so this was a nice, touch here. The finish on this comes, Sheamus was getting ready to hit the Celtic Cross on Brian. Del Rio slams the headset down, jumps up on the apron and on, kind of onto the rope, yelling at Sheamus. Sheamus shoves Brian into Del Rio, which knocks Del Rio in the ring. Del Rio backtracks. Sheamus kind of chases him out of the ring while that's happening. In the opposite corner, Brian is recovered, climbs to the top rope. He jumps off the top rope for something, but gets bro-kicked out of the air for the pinfall victory. And Sheamus celebrates in the ring as Del Rio and Ricardo look on, and Daniel Bryan was dead somewhere. A good match. I mean, I get a really good match. Truth be told, I mean, these guys put on a heck of a show. Again, Sheamus sold well for Bryan's offense. Bryan really worked that shoulder. Showed the ring psychology that, you know, that makes him such a fantastic ring general, knowing how to tell a story in the ring and focusing on that arm and keep going back to it, changing everything right here. It was a great match. I assume this is the official blow off. And as much as I didn't think this was necessary, we got a great match out of it, so I'm not going to hate on it here and just, you know, like it for what it was and excited about Brian moving on to Punk and seeing what those two can do together.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where I'm at, too. You know, I didn't expect to see another match so soon out of Brian and Sheamus. I thought, you know, maybe they'd let it kind of cool off for a bit and maybe go back to it later if they wanted to. But it was nice to get another great match out of these two. You know, we waited a long time to actually see, you know, a competitive match between them, you know, at a major pay-per-view, and we got that at Extreme Rules. And, you know, this was a nice follow-up to kind of, you know, fill up whatever loose ends that might have been there. I don't think there were many, but, you know, a decisive victory for the champion, Sheamus, who, you know, again had to kind of overcome that injured shoulder, and you know, they told a good story in the ring regarding that, just like they did on Sunday, and, you know, no change in results, but another, you know, fun 15-minute match, and I'm not going to complain about that.
Yeah, and a fun way to win the show, or end the show, and looks like they're moving on now, finally, at this point, to Daniel Bryan and CM Punk. Alberto Del Rio and Sheamus will be coming next, and Jake and I will be back next week for another SmackDown audio review. Anything else you want to add about the show before we get out of here, Jake?
No, thank you for coming at all, man. Thanks again.
All right, well, we will be back next week for live coverage, as well as, again, the SmackDown audio review of the show. If you want to get access to all the other audio I talked about at the top of the program, the Raw audio review, the TNA Impact audio review, the .NET Countdown, the Audio Slam, the Q&A audio, .NET Weekly, access to the ad-free version of the site, access to the .NET Members Forum, the .NET Members Blog section, all of that, simply $5.50 a month. That's all it is. Head on over to ProWrestling.net, click on the right-hand side of the page for that .NET member sign up, and we will get you going. Thank you guys for listening. We will see you back here next week. Everyone have a fantastic weekend, and take care.